This is London Calling.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
I wish they'd get out of my way.
I love them. I do. Yeah, really do.
Hey guys, welcome to the Pahoda Festival Special, Big Smoke Music Weekly, Season 5, Episode 7, with me, your host, Luke Scanlon. I cannot wait for this episode. It was such a good festival, and we have an interview with Metronomy, plus, now take a deep breath, Luke, plus audio from the Libertines pre-headline slot press conference. I cannot wait. Did I have a bit of a meltdown after meeting them? I'll tell you about that later on. I'll tell you about the hottest acts I saw across the weekend, why Pahoda Festival was so good, and some of the key moments from across the weekend. So sit back, chill out, and brace yourself for the Pahoda Festival Special. Yes, well, hello guys. You've probably noticed I've got quite a bit of a Rod Stewart, Marge Simpson, Phil Mitchell undertone to my voice. Some say it makes me sound sexier. Others say it makes me sound like I haven't gone to bed in about 2 weeks. It's a combination of the two. A bit of it is from Pahoda, the trip I had out there, and also Truck Festival, which we'll be having another episode for as well. But let me tell you then about Pahoda Festival. Flew out with my pal Harry, and we went to Bratislava first of all. And you're banking on great weather, aren't you, on the summer holiday? But just probably the worst rain I've ever seen in my life. This stuff was biblical, man. We were swimming. Like, it was ridiculous. There was puddles up to my ankles. And basically, we were forced to go to bars, basically, to take cover. We simply had to go for a pint to get out of the rain. It was so stupid. But yeah, tiny, tiny city. It was way smaller than I was anticipating. But a cool place all the same. One of the weirdest places we went to, and a bit of a standout that's kind of stuck in my mind, there was like a KGB-themed bar. So we walked in, it's kind of like this underground thing, and there's like guns up on the ceiling, busts of Lenin, and then we grabbed our pint. By the way, it's like £2 a pint out there, like really good beer. Grabbed a pint, and we sit in this little booth, and we turn around, and there's just this huge portrait of Stalin. It's like, yeah, just having a pint with a genocidal maniac. So weird, but we had a great night out. We met some guys that are locals. They took us to another bar. They were buying apricot schnapps, which I just never thought I'd be drinking on a night out. And one of them was like, yeah, I have work at 7 a.m, couple of Red Bulls, I'll be absolutely fine. So, yeah, great. And from there, we went on to Trenčín, a beautiful little town where the festival, Pahoda, was based. Big Smoke Music Weekly in partnership with Sound On. Yes, guys, this time out, I've got to tell you about a great new interview with Sound On and the amazing Howlers. They've been talking about this big debate that's going on in music at the moment. I think I've previously mentioned it earlier on this season. And they're talking about basically how artists are using TikTok, which is a big thing at the moment. And they've also been speaking about why artists shouldn't culturally appropriate working class culture. Well worth a listen. I had a listen last night. And very, very interesting comments from the boys. As always, head over to the Sound On YouTube channel. That's Sound On, all one word. And check that out. And as I'm sure you know by now, plenty and plenty of great music content for you to get your teeth into. Check out Sound On now. Big Smoke Music Weekly in partnership with Sound On. All right, well, about the festival itself then. I mean, what a great place to have a festival. It was in like an abandoned airfield. So cool, man. And yeah, I don't know what it is about a long stretch of tarmac that makes a walk seem far longer than it actually is, but you enter the festival and you're walking down what was obviously the old runway. It just seems like a mile from the opening gate. But one of my highlights of walking down there was a few portaloos. Obviously, you're never at a festival if there aren't portaloos. And I was walking along, minding my own, and all I can imagine this woman did, she was kind of leaning on the door while she opened it, and I was coming along, and she just absolutely bawled out of this portaloo and went bang straight on the tarmac. And remarkably, she was absolutely fine, and I think that was purely because of festival intoxication, to be honest. It's one of those classic things. If I was sober, I'd have hurt myself there. It's amazing to see. But Trenčín itself, beautiful little town. We found this great little bar called Lanius. little brewery. It was £2 a pint, and the food was like unbelievable. They love like a pickled something in Slovakia. They love horseradish. What else do they love? Mustard, bread. It's just like proper hearty food, but like exactly what you need for a big day at a festival. Now, Trenčín is a little bit far away from the festival. We actually became people we never thought we would become, because it was actually easier for us to hire out little like electric scooters to get down there. So it is really bizarre, like going to a festival and turning up an electric scooter. I honestly thought like, I felt like I was a 14-year-old. It was ridiculous, but it was good fun. But anyway, on the Thursday, we got there. The headliner was Nick Cave. Not massive into Nick Cave, but I have to say, what a showman. He was so good. One of my personal highlights was Grandmaster Flash, though. And he did this like history of his career and was basically talking about how he started playing in parks in Brooklyn and how he created the kind of the scratch of the record and how he used to mark it out with a crayon. And he went through and did this big montage. The Clash were in there, which we love to see. And Old Soul. And then he basically did this big thing about my friends, is what he kept saying. It's kind of like, you know, Notorious B.I.G., Bismarcky, people like that. And it was just amazing, man. The crowd were absolutely buzzing off it. And I remember he actually called it an album of covers of the hottest breaks. And I was like, yes, man, that's exactly what I'm here for. And he wasn't on until like 1 a.m, which is great. That's one thing I will say about European festivals. They start later, so you can, you know, chill out a little bit, sleep basically, which you can't do at UK festivals, and just, yeah, have a way more chilled out day. But they do finish way later, so it kind of counteracts, but it's much better having music start later on in the day, I think. And, of course, my pick of the bunch of the Thursday night, the first night of the festival, were the brilliant Brighton band that started out way back in the mid-noughties, and let's be honest, they lit up the indie scene with that breakthrough album, Night Out, in 2008, filled with just pure electro indie pop greatness. This year, they released their seventh studio album, Small World, the amazing Metronomy. I was lucky enough to grab a chat with Joe Mounts, lead singer of Metronomy, before their amazing set on the Thursday night.
Cool, right, we are joined by Joe from Metronomy.
Hello.
Ben, how are you, sir? You good?
Very well, thank you.
Nice,
yeah,
very good. Nice. First question, just because we were listening to you earlier on today. Do you ever get your own tunes stuck in your head, like a bit of an earworm?
When I'm making a record, I do. But... yeah, so when I'm making a record, I get something stuck in my head. And that can often lead you to think that it's like a massive tune. But it's just because you've listened to it a lot.
Yeah.
More often, though, like, at the moment, my children are a bit obsessed with that Heatwave song. So I've had that stuck in my head for about a week.
Nice, man. Because yeah. I've had Salted Caramel Ice Cream.
I mean, like, I'd rather have that stuck in my head.
For sure, man. Driving the locals nuts. But, yeah, mate, I wanted to ask, but obviously, you've got quite a big summer or festivals lined up. When you're looking at a festival set, it's quite a thing that, like, Panthers talk about quite a lot. Do you kind of sit down as a band and think, right, let's do all of the kind of the hits, if you like, or do you sometimes mix it up?
It's weird, because you think that, like... It changes. Like, the way it works is you'll do the first festival and you'll have this idea of what's going to be perfect, and then you'll do it and you'll be like, oh, that wasn't perfect, like, I wonder why. And there's always a little period of adjusting. So, like, I think, like, as an example, I think the very first festival we did, we were like just hits, like come in with a bang and just like bang 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 bang, and then we did it and it was sort of like it didn't have any, like, it was missing something.
Yeah.
And I think what you realize is actually at festivals, people are looking for other kind of moments. And so, like, we threw in a couple of more instrumental songs into the set,
yeah,
which were just, like, more kind of more having it. And then it was like, oh, okay, wow, this is, like, what people...
Nice, man. People want to boogie. Yeah, nice. Well, let's talk about another festival. You've already played this summer, Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Watched it from on the TV, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. I still get to go to Glastonbury, man. That's the one I've been to. Yeah, unbelievable the amount I've been to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wanted to ask about a moment, Oscar's moment.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, run through that. Because was that him being like, Joe, please can I do this?
So like if you've been to our gigs recently, before the look, we started doing this thing where I was getting Oscar to sort of do a little vocal performance. So that's something we were doing. But the thing that changes is like the reason I say he's doing it. So every day we're playing a gig, there's like a different reason for him to do this little vocal moment. And you know, there's a thing about Glastonbury where, like, you know, whenever you imagine it, whenever you think about it, I think sometimes about being there, but I often just think about the BBC coverage and them like rabbiting on about like, oh, there was a real moment during like such and such.
Very true.
So I was, you know, I guess it was a bit of a riff on the fact that the BBC weren't showing our performance live.
Yeah.
The thing about Glastonbury this year was that it was amazing. And like the crowd we had was amazing. And like, you know, at a festival like that, you have all of these, every year there's like these sort of exciting bands, like newer bands to go and see. And, you know, it's been a long time since we were talked about in that kind of way.
Mm.
But still, like, to have that reaction, to have that crowd, like, I don't know, like, it was really poignant. Like, it was really nice.
Yeah, yeah. Nice, man. I think it was your Instagram post as well. So I don't get too emo.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's true.
Very nice, man. Let's chat about the latest album, mate. Small World. I was listening again. We listened to it earlier on today. And obviously I've listened to the album already. But quite a smoother sound.
Yeah.
Astronomy. What ran us through that, man, and how that kind of came into being?
I mean, like, there's always so many different reasons, but the previous record, Metronomy Forever, was, like, had this very kind of scattergun approach, like, in how it was made and how it was produced. And it's much more electronic, much more sort of representative of, like, how I, like, just make music, which is, like, you know, lots of different ideas. So I wanted to do something that was more focused and more and less electronic, something kind of like quite different. So I had this idea, and then obviously like the pandemic happened and that sort of focused this idea even more, that it was like a kind of stripped back record made during a sort of stripped back time. But you know, it's like, you know, by now, because I made quite a few records, they sort of serve like a different purpose to how they did at the very beginning. Like at the beginning, you're trying to like present yourself to the world.
Yeah.
And so now you can use them differently. You can use them to sort of like capture a little moment. And I guess that's what this record is. It's like a more sort of reflective album. Mm.
Does that also, is it 99 you guys started out?
I mean, like that's when I started making music on my own, but it was like 2005 was the first album.
Right, sure, yeah. So I guess, as you say, you kind of change your outlook and stuff. Does it change with you getting older, and you meant before we record, and you have kids now? Does that come into your music, you think, at all?
Oh, well, it does because I sort of want it to, in a way. Yeah. Like, because you spend so much of your time thinking like, oh, we want to be in like a young, hip band. And then you realize that, oh, well, like, we can't be that anymore.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And it's almost quite a relief. It's like, oh, like, we're a kind of established, mature band. And there's something quite fun about it, you know?
Yeah, it's like,
and you start to see yourself as, like, you know, like, we were touring with, like, a number of really brilliant young artists, like Grove.
Porridge recently.
Lynx, yeah, Porridge.
Yeah.
And Goat Girl and all these groups are like brilliant, and they were all sort of saying to me like, oh, like I used to be so obsessed with Nights Out, like I really like, you know, like I used to really love you when I was like whatever,
like a sugar coated
but there's something like, oh, okay, like that's, you know, that's sort of where I'm at now.
Yeah, is it like, weird to think of Metronomy as an influence?
It's like a huge honor. Mm. Like, it's weird, but it's really like that in a slightly kind of perverse way. Like, I think I've always had that as like, I've always wanted to be like, I don't know, like, I've always wanted to, yeah, to sort of be, to mean something yeah. to other musicians or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's nice, know, man. Yeah. Yeah. How do you see yourself? Mate, by the way, big birthday for you this year. Sorry to bring
it
that
is,
up.
Yeah, yeah. Not for a while.
The big 4-0, September, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Still got
I was going to ask, well, because there's artists like the likes of, I'm a massive Paul Weller fan, likes of Weller that have been around for, like, obviously way longer than you have been.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll ever branch out and do sort more solo avenue?
Well, I guess the thing is that it's always the like, you know, metronomy is this weird combination of the two, like, you know, it's a bit of a solo thing, but then we go out and tour.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's sort of, you're almost like afforded more fun when you get a bit older, and you can, you know, I guess like Paul Weller, yeah, he started calling himself Paul Weller, but like the Jam and the Star Council was basically Paul Weller, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I guess you got a bit more freedom to do that kind of stuff. But I do like the idea of always being metronomy. And I like the idea of, like, the more you stick to it, the sort of more of a statement it becomes.
Nice, I'll interview you just for your 60th birthday. We're like, we're
still Yeah, exactly.
Nice, man. Let's talk a bit more about the festivals you're doing later on. So I looked at the official metronomy website.
Yeah.
Are you actually playing Belgium, France, and Portugal in the same day?
So it says that.
I don't know if it is, or it's just that's the impossible. Start day of the festival, but I was like, surely not.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say. But yeah, you've got Austria and Switzerland coming up. How does a foreign festival differ for you guys, do you think, in terms of
It just
crowd?
Really depends. Like, I think the festival at this one is quite established, so it has its own, a bit like something like Glastonbury or Reading, whatever, like it has its own vibe, like, and then there are other festivals which are newer and maybe are sort of not quite as established in that way. But it really depends on the country, and I think it also depends on the night that you play.
Yeah,
like in a way, I think tonight's quite a good night because it's almost like before the festival, so everyone can like peak too early.
Everyone's fresh.
Though. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
everyone's got the energy to have a dance to metronomy tonight. Yeah. Man, that's good. I just wanted to ask then a few questions about festivals. What do you think the weirdest thing you've seen at a festival is? Is there one moment that you can't think, what?
I remember seeing at Glastonbury once, I was sitting in my tent and I remember seeing someone like just running up to another tent, picking it up, and like running off, and I was like,
"That's and like then, the equipment stealing someone's home."
Yeah, and then that night, I heard the people come back to that, and they're just like screaming and like, "I mean, you know what I mean?" Like, I felt like I didn't know what to do. What could I have done?
You're a witness to a Glastonbury big crime, there.
Yeah,
nice. Survival kit, three things for a festival. What are you bringing?
If you're asking me that question in like 1998, for example, that'd be very different to now.
Let's do it.
Like 98, you would need a decent money belt. You know what I mean? Because there weren't really cash points. There's nice. Probably like
a bit, what,
one
like a big old bum bag.
No, like a discreet. Because like it was literally the first time I went to Glastonbury, I had to take out. There were maybe two ATM machines at Glastonbury.
Shit. Yeah.
So like you'd have to take out all your cash. But you don't want to lose it. So keep that nice and close.
Here he is, money bags.
Yeah. I think also, like, because in those days as well, it's like important phone numbers written down. But actually, no, it was pointless because no one had phones. Maybe like, in case of emergency, if you find me,
please
phone this number. And then just like, sensible clothing, you know?
Sensible clothing.
Wellies, good socks.
Nice, man. Yeah. Nice. And personally for you, best festival moment you've ever experienced, you think?
I mean, I think there's been quite a lot. I remember like watching, weirdly, like watching whatever it was, 98 would it have been, at Glastonbury?
Nice.
And like, I remember watching football like on a big screen in a huge field surrounded by people like on various different things. Like that'd been quite unusual.
I heard that at Isle of Wight Festival in 2018.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's quite different fun. Yeah.
Vibe. But then and you like, kind of feel sorry for the bands.
Yes. No, I know. And I think, I can't remember who it was that was suffering at that. Yeah, I think maybe it was even like the Foo Fighters at Glastonbury, who no one watched because of the football.
Yeah.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
There it is, my chat with the brilliant Joe Mount, and what a band. It's quite interesting to hear him talk about how his life as an artist and the life of Metronomy as a band has changed as he's got older. And he's become this influence to people who are probably about my age in bands, if not a bit younger, and have just grown up with his music and have had his music shape what their tunes are all about. It's such an interesting, weird dynamic to think about. You know, you start off as a new band and you end up being someone else's influence. Very cool indeed. Stick around, because later on in the show, we will be catching up with Joe for a lovely little slice of Either Or, the festival edition.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Okay, right. Well, on to the Friday then at the festival. Isn't this a lovely bit of chronological planning from me? The Friday at the festival was amazing. As I said before, we had the late starts down at Pohoda, which was amazing. We could take in a bit of bloody culture in the day. So we went to the amazing Trenchin Castle, which was so cool. So we went up there, bit of a climb, I have to say. Puffing by the time we got to the top. And there's this guy doing falconry, man. I swear to God, it was the biggest owl I've ever seen in my life. It was about 3 foot off the floor. This thing was an absolute beast. We were like, surely that thing's just pumping itself full of owl version of steroids. Anyway, so we went to go check that out. We mulled out in the little square in Trenchin. The weather was just like so nice. We did have a bit of rain on the Thursday night and a little bit on Friday too, but overall, in Trenchin, it was decent. And to be honest, anything after that rain in Bratislava was a welcome sight. It was mental. So later on that day, we got into the festival and we saw a band, let's be honest, of the moment, the brilliant Wolf Alice. Just what a set that was. I think it was about 5 p.m.-ish that they played. And it was just so nice to see how buzzing they were to be there. They always put on a great show and the crowd absolutely adored them. It was an amazing set. They're on for about an hour and I don't think they stopped for a breath at any point. It was just proper turn up, bang, on time. That's another thing about European festivals. Bands are never a minute late. It is amazing. Everything's like clockwork. When I've been to Sziget before, it's the same. Bands are there, bang. I think the only band I remember cocking up the timings, I think it was 2014 Sziget, and I was like, yeah, of course it's a British band that have done this. Palma Violets were about 30 minutes late. Unbelievable. Anyway, yeah, Friday, we saw Wolf Alice. That got us well in the mood for the rest of the day. And we saw Black Country New Road later on in the day. They were playing in a tent, which I can only describe as the loudest tent ever. And a lot of their set was quite chilled out compared to other times I've seen them. And it was, yeah, a lot of instrumentals from them. Obviously, a few of their album tracks are instrumentals anyway. But yeah, a lot less singing going on than I was anticipating. So later on in the day, as I said, a little bit wet here and there. Luckily enough, we were on press bands. So we had these lockers in the press area that we could dump our shit in if needs be. Headed in there and I saw this little hand scribbled sign on the door saying, press conference at 7:30, the Libertines. Now, the Libs, as I'm sure you're aware, are my favourite band ever, like, of all time. I was already excited to see them. It was actually, I think it was the 10th time I've seen them. And I was like, oh, guys, does that mean I can come as well? And they're like, yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. So, got down there nice and early, front row of the press conference, and I've got to be honest, one of the best days of my life, one of the best moments of my life, just to see the four of them there. I've met a couple of the band before, but to have four of my heroes sat in front of me and to be able to ask them questions was honestly an absolute honour, and I'm still absolutely buzzing from it now. So these are my questions to the Libertines at their Pohoda Festival press conference.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Carl, I was going to ask, mate, obviously Waterloo, 15 years old this year, and you also had Up the Bracket anniversary. Did you take a moment to think, Jesus, where's the time gone?
Yeah, I spent most of my time doing that, actually.
Nice.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, it's been quite a couple of decades. And yeah, these are, it's quite alarming. These anniversaries, they kind of it'll crop up. 20 years, 15 years, I don't know what that means. Something I can take him down the pub and buy him a pint. Anyway, it's fucking mental. But yeah, it's, I guess it's my celebrating, right?
Yeah. Great show at Lecture Board.
Oh, thank you.
Pete, I was going to ask, mate, you talked about earlier the band being bigger than the people in the band. Me and myself, I grew up wanting you guys to get back together. You broke up probably when I was about 10, so I was like, never had the Libertines, couldn't see you live. How has it been to kind of have that generation, my generation, be able to come see you live and have that new generation of love for you guys?
Yeah, no, it's everything. Yeah, it's everything, isn't it? We always like have a little peek around the curtain before going on stage. It's like, look, there's young people in the crowd still. So, yeah, that means a lot.
You could be really good with us for water, to be honest with you. I think it's always been the same for us when we first used to start out. There was this sort of, I guess it sounded about 15 the old blokes at the back, and they'd seen the Clash, and they're like, "What's all this? They're fucking these upstarts. What's all the Clash?" And then in front of them there was sort of students, and then the little kids going mental. And we've been one of those lucky bands that it's not like it's just a load of old blokes in fezzes now dancing about. It's like one of those lucky bands. There's always young faces at the front, and it's a fucking blessing, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is a blessing. We are blessed to be able to, play our music and still scrape a living from performing.
Just one for the road, if that's cool. Talked about Feel for McNasties and stuff like that, and obviously used to play in Boogaloo, obviously small little pubs like impromptu stuff. Playing a big festival today, and you do a lot of arena tours like Wembley coming up. Does your heart still lie in those smaller sets, do you think, or do you much rather see those big shows now?
Do you mind? Yeah, no, I was going to say our heart lies completely in playing anywhere, in any size venue, but now I'm struggling to think of the last time we played in a pub as the four of us. No, whenever we get the chance, really, isn't it?
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope you do it all the time, to be honest.
Well, no, what about the morning before the Kentish Town gig in January? And I said, there's an open mic night, an open mic morning on the barge. Come on, lads, it'd be great. And I was the only one that turned up.
Yeah. Morning, barge.
Yeah, sell it to you,
Pete. It's gone now, that barge. You've missed the boat on that, haven't you?
I don't know, if you're interested, there's a bar in Margate.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've got our own little
seedy
little bar now.
And there's another one opening up around the corner.
Oh, of course.
So you can make a little Margate tour. You fancy? You in?
100%.
You've got this 100%. Hotel at Margate. You're like, I've got to come.
I need to come down.
Yeah, get yourself down the Outway Moon, John. Go east.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
It's the most surreal thing to have your favourite band to answer questions that you've asked. It's really weird. You're kind of not really focusing on what they're saying back, because you're like, oh my God, they're talking to me. So yeah, inside I was proper fangirling. But yeah, it was amazing. And great to hear them talking as well about how happy they were to be there and to have that new generation of Libertines fans still very much in love with their music. Obviously, I wasn't the only person in the press conference. There were a lot of other people there, a lot of local press outlets and national Slovakian press outlets. They began with their questions by asking if any new Libertines music is on the way.
Yeah, we've got some plans to start writing again. We've been doing a lot. We've been doing so much. I think we've been dining out on this one long enough, haven't we, on the last record. So yeah, it's pretty time to do something new. But it's been a while. We've been doing different things, but we didn't want to rush it, and I think we're waiting for our paths to sort of align. And it feels right.
Yeah.
A baby would be born.
Yeah, a nice fat smiling baby. Yeah, I think we're all driven like creatively. You know? I think we're all pretty much like obsessed with and possessed by music, and we've all been making music, you know, together and apart. It's just finding the moments where we're all in the same room, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll make another record, no?
Yes.
Yes. It's great to see you like this and to have a chance to ask you some questions. Thank you so much for coming. The last time I see you playing live was in 2015 when you came back with the new album, and you seemed very happy on stage, like you were having such a great time. And I was wondering, whenever you're not together, what is the one thing that you miss the most about playing as the Libertines? What is the one thing that makes the band so special?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when I'm not playing with Libertines, I feel that something's kind of missing. And it's only when you get in a situation where you're all together, it's like, that was it.
I think that what's special for me about Libertines is it's actually greater than the sum of its members. And so when, I miss it when we're not playing together. And I did it when we weren't together, but when we first got back together. When the cab driver says you in a band, should I know you? Before I say, yeah, when it was Cromer. When I could go, I'm Carl from the Libertines again, if it was a bit of a buzz about that. So that's why I stayed in the band.
Yeah, regardless of everything that's actually happened with us before in the past, I mean, it's the journey between all four of us that actually brought us to this day, to brought us here. You know, I wouldn't be here now if I hadn't met Peter and Carl in Filthy McNasters, and have Carl ask me if I wanted to, if I'd ever drank a David Niven's beforehand, and just started talking about nonsense, and then them introduced me to their world of music and everything else, and saw where the lines kind of crossed, and it all became blurred, because it was like, hell, I'm into that as well, that's actually really, really cool. And then just going down into the studio and playing, and then all of a sudden we just began this mad journey together. But then obviously, at a particular stage, like the journey kind of, you know, we kind of like went our separate ways. We all did our own thing. John did Yeti, Carl and I did Dirty Pretty Things, Peter Shambles, you know, Carl wrote a book, Peter wrote a book, a DJ. We went on and did all of these separate little things, but all of these things would have meant absolutely nothing without the input of what we actually did beforehand. We would never have had the opportunity to be the individuals that we wanted to be without actually meeting each other.
I miss, when I'm not with the Libertines, I miss some sacred, pivotal moments in music, like the opening chords to Death on the Stairs, or when the drums and the guitar start, Don't Look Back Into the Sun.
So you don't miss us then?
But those moments can't exist with any other band. If I'm like rehearsing, not to put my drums in, but if I'm rehearsing and I do the opening chords to Death on the Stairs, it's a bit of like a, you know what I mean? It's a bit of a sour moment in the room, because can't really do them songs with anyone else, and that's, for me, that's what drives this band. These songs that we play, they don't really work with anyone else, you know. It's us four. I don't think, without all four of us, I don't think we could continue. Although saying that, when John had COVID, Drew did quite a good job. But it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same, John.
Thanks.
No, I thought that was a sweet answer. there's magic moments that I know, yeah, they can't exist with anyone else, and I still treasure them the same way I always did, like from when we were first taking the songs out to the first time around, like 20 years ago. And
next question.
I have a question. I know you have a lot of information, and also you have the good time and bad time. And for me, I would like to know if you have some moment in your head or in your memory which is special for you and you remember it. I don't know, it might be moment, or it is any situation or something. What do you remember? Did you have something like that?
In Bristol last week. That was good. Yeah, I think, you know, it's
she's asking me, Joe.
Oh, right.
there was a moment we played in Sheffield, at the Sheffield Leadmill, and for years we've been like, you know, we've been playing all the pubs in London, and then we got signed and we took the songs out, but it was still like confrontation with the crowd instead of like what you said about spreading love. There wasn't really a lot of love in them early days. It was quite a spiky relationship with the crowd. But then it was that one gig where finally the wall came down and the crowd knew the songs, and then we saw like the first mosh pit and the crowd were going mental. And unfortunately the security turned fire hoses on the crowd. There's quite a bit of damp on it, but that was a magic moment there. And I remember looking over to Carl, and it was, looked at him and nodded, like to say, like, look at that, I think we were doing Horror Show. And that was what we'd always wanted, just to see, like, bodies moving in front of us, you know? And just, yeah, to get lost in the reverie, all them particles moving about. And that was like, yeah, I remember that distinctly.
See, the thing about us, it's not necessarily just all about the music. It's about the connection that we have with everybody else as well. I think that is one of the main reasons why a lot of people kind of like gravitate towards the four of us, because there are no kind of like barriers. So, you know, you can come and hang out with us whenever you want. You know, the good old days, the good old days, I hardly ever turned up to any of it, but the Albion Rooms, where you just invite people into your most inner sanctum, and people would just be like sitting around, you'd be playing music with them, offering people drinks, you'd be swapping cigarettes, swapping life stories, engaging in tales of woe, engaging in tales of life between people. It's not just about sitting, it's not just about the liking of music, and that's what I think, that's what transcends a show between us, because we walk out on stage and we see the smiles on everybody's faces, and those smiles on everybody's faces, it tells us everything that we need to know. We go on stage with every intention of playing the best show that we possibly can do between the four of us, but then that completely changes when we actually have that interaction with the audience. And when that interaction with the audience begins, then that show isn't the four of us playing, that is everybody playing. Everybody takes part in a Libertine show. Is there a better show than another show? Is there one show that's better than another? Maybe there is, I don't know. But then, in order for us to truly answer that question, you're gonna have to ask every single person that turns up, because they're all part of that show. Because it's all for one, and one for all. The boys came up with a saying back in the day, four guys, backs against the wall, smoking furiously. Those four people with the backs against the wall, smoking furiously, was looking at it from a very micro point of view, but the macro point of view was everybody backs against the wall, smoking furiously, because we were all in it together.
Now, there was an interview, I remember I was fascinated by this interview when I was younger with Johnny Rotten, John Lydon, and he sat on the edge of a bed, I think it's in like above the rehearsal studio in Denmark Street in 1978, something like that. And they asked him about his heroes, what bands he likes, and he's just really, you know, grumpy and mean, and he goes, I don't have any heroes. They're all useless. And then the interviewer, I think it was Julie Birchall, she sat on the floor. She says, yeah, but you're a hero now to some people. And he goes, well, I don't know about that. I just, you know, I like to talk to people after the gig and I say, what's life like for you? You know, Julie, basic stuff. I don't know why, that always yeah. It was a really, real powerful moment for me. Like, yeah. Just like, so I started doing it whenever we played out of London. I was like, so what's life like for you? freaked a few people out, actually. But then occasionally you meet someone who'd seen the same clip. You know,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know what I'm trying to say that, but I always like that, you know? What's life like for you? It feels like we're a long way from home, like in Slovakia, but we met loads of people today, didn't we? Like walking around Bratislava, they didn't know about the festival, they're not coming to the gig. But, you know, they stop me and say, oh, yeah, I know, and then they'll talk about a particular song, and, yeah, it blows your mind. Even though I've been here before, and played here before, and had a really good reception, I'm still amazed and, like, rejuvenated and inspired by the way music can transcend borders, you know, especially in this age, like, post-Brexit, where it's fucking difficult to get anywhere, you know what I mean? So like, it is, like, it's hard work traveling as a band now, even like basic stuff like getting guitars in and out of the UK is a nightmare, yeah. All right.
One last question.
Do you also sometimes get tired of the past being talked about all the time, at least in the media, and you always being kind of measured up against?
No, this is the first press conference we've done in 10 years. No one. We love talking about the past. We'll talk about it all day. So it's a novelty for us. Right,
yeah.
Don't really have a problem with it, because in order for us to know where we're going, we've got to know where we came from. when we started working with Mick Jones back in the day, on the first album, he came down to the studio eventually after getting lost and pissed around and just kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, I really got really lost. I thought the studio was somewhere else. Play for us. We played for him. Then we went to a pub around the corner from the studio we were in, affectionately called the Albion. Yeah, we went to the Albion and we sat down and we quizzed him because it's Mick Jones from The Clash, for fuck's sake. I mean, we're not just going to sit down and try and be cool. It's Mick Jones. So we chatted with Mick and then one of us, I can't remember whom, asked Mick what at the time I thought was kind of an odd question. And the question was, do you have any regrets about being in The Clash? And I was just like, well, you can't ask Mick Jones. He's got any regrets, it's a fucking Clash. And Mick said, yeah, I do have regrets. And the one regret I have is not being able to mend fences, to mend bridges with the rest of the guys in the band. The band split up. He left the band badly. Him and Joe weren't friends when they left. But they were friends. They may have disagreed about the way they did things. And they may have disagreed about the way they approached each other regarding those things they did, but intrinsically, they still loved each other. They just couldn't work together. And because of that, they parted ways badly. And then, obviously, unfortunately, Joe Strummer died, and Mick never had the opportunity to at least see his friend and say, shit, man, I'm sorry. Or vice versa, never had that opportunity. Conversely, we're placed somewhat in that position, mainly by press. I mean, I don't actually remember actually ever falling out with Peter when the band split up. And Peter never, ever in my mind, albeit I didn't read all of the press, never said a bad thing about me or anyone else. It was mainly press manipulation. So let's not beat around the bush. Things weren't great within the camp. But did we still love each other? Yeah, we did. Of course we did. We couldn't do the things that we wanted to do at that particular point in time. We couldn't. The journey was going in different directions and we needed to figure that out. And in order for us to figure that out, we had to kind of do what we had to do. As soon as we got back together, it was literally like we'd been together 2 weeks previously.
I feel like the thing is, you know, it's always from this moment on, isn't it? It's kind of like, you know, you have to start from now and move forward, you know. I guess, you know, like continuously being asked questions about the past is, you kind of have to, that will change the meaning of the past, you know, it will change in the present.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Lovely stuff. So after the press conference, I was lucky enough to go and meet the boys and have a chat with them after. And Carl Barrett said to me, he's like, you don't sound very Slovakian. What brings you out this way? I was like, well, you, Carl, you brought me out this way. He's like, oh, right, yeah, fair enough. And then, obviously, I had a picture with the guys, and I reminded Pete that he bit me on the head last time I saw him in Southampton. He was like, oh, yeah. And he tried to do it again, which is great. So, obviously, later on that night, they played their set. It was full of energy, raucous as ever. And I was pretty much down the front, and there was this young guy. He was probably about 20 years old, young local guy. And I kind of looked at him and I was like, do you want to dance? He was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, all right, I'm going to throw you. And he's like, all right. So I just picked him up, threw him. And that was it. Beginning of the mosh. It was great. I came out of there absolutely dripping. So yeah, all in all, absolute dream day at Pohoda Festival on the Friday.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
So obviously the Friday was a big day. Slow start to things on the Saturday. One band I did really enjoy was Snail Mail. They played on the main stage, I think it was kind of mid-afternoon time. But yeah, really nice, chilled out set, which was exactly what I needed at the time. It's quite nice, isn't it, when you are kind of feeling a little bit tender or tired at a festival, where some sets are just perfectly pitched for the mood that you're in. And that was exactly what Snail Mail brought to the party. Slight kind of chill Nirvana vibes to their sound, actually, which I hadn't really picked up having listened to them just at home or in my earphones or whatever. And I love that about seeing a band live. It's a completely different dynamic a lot of the time. And that was certainly true of Snail Mail. Harry, who I was with, my mate, lent in, and lead singer Lindsay Jordan, great singer. But my mate Harry lent in and he went, mate, is it me or has she got the most superb teeth you've ever seen? I was like, to be fair, if she wants another line of work, she should definitely get onto like Aquafresh or Colgate, because sweet Jesus, they are one mighty fine set of gnashers, let me tell you.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Another band we saw on the Saturday were a London collective, which I'd actually only heard of having seen them on the lineup for Pagoda. And they were, I think I'm pronouncing this right, Kokoroko or Kokoroko. They were brilliant. Very kind of relaxed, soulful, kind of like an improvised sound to their set, and just very much brought like a loving energy to proceedings. They were over on the Orange stage, which is a brilliant stage, by the way, which Metronomy played at. And there's one thing I will say, actually. Orange put up a temporary mast for the festival, so you didn't have any of this like complete black hole of signal that you usually get at UK festivals. Not that I'm on my phone all the time, but it's quite handy just to call people up or check if there's been any lineup adjustments and that sort of thing. So yeah, that was really cool.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
All right, earlier on we spoke to Metronomy frontman Joe Mount. Their set was so good. I was surprised to hear them play the bass so early on. I think it was the second song. But yeah, absolute stonker of a set. I did promise we'll give you his festival-themed Either Ors. So without further ruddy-do, here they are.
Number one, these are all kind of festival-themed-ish. Warm beer or warm cider?
That's a warm beer.
Yeah, you're going for that. Number two is Wellies or Doc Martens?
Wellies.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Not get clammy?
Yeah, I guess, but like, you have to break in Doc Martens, don't you? Wellies, you just chuck them on.
I didn't mean to put so much doubt in your mind, sorry. number three, camp or glam?
Well, like glam, obviously.
I knew you'd be glam.
I mean, like,
love it, love it.
You know, I've never really done it.
But. I feel like I might know your answer to this one. Day or night set?
Oh, well, probably night. I go for night.
But just earlier than tonight.
Earlier than tonight, but yeah. Night.
Yeah. That's cool. Burger van or edgy organic health food van?
Oh, burger van. Every single bit of food I bought at Glastonbury this year was awful.
Was it?
Yeah.
Do you fried onion on the burger as well?
I mean, like, I'll just take whatever they give. But like everything they give me is so bad. Yeah.
I'm glad you're still with us.
Yeah.
Next one, attend as artist or a punter?
I think as a punter.
I mean,
know?
When did you last go to a festival as a punter?
Well, exactly. I did stick around at Glastonbury a bit, but the last time I went as a punter was, years ago.
Chocolate ice cream or salted caramel ice cream?
Chocolate.
Oh, not salted caramel.
No.
What about the song? And I'll do a quick look over the shoulder. British or abroad festival?
Oh, well, that's too vague.
Very different.
Too vague, because there are some really bad British festivals.
Yeah, we know.
And there's some really brilliant kind of foreign ones as well. So, yeah. I mean, as a rule, I would probably say foreign or abroad.
Yeah, I'd probably back that. I'm actually going to end on a completely left field question. If you were to straighten your hair, in its current state, how long would it be?
It would be like, shoulder length.
Oh, amazing!
Yeah,
that would really throw everyone off. I can do that one. Sleek.
When I have a shower,
yeah,
and I occasionally will brush it to get all the knots out. I like to imagine I look like a sort of aged footballer.
Love it. Brushing the secrets out.
Yeah.
And there it is. That is Joe Mount's Either Ors for festival season. Quite interesting to say that he'd rather be a punter, but the food was terrible at Glastonbury. Who'd have known? Who'd have known, man? What was that all about? Anyway, I just want to say my thanks to Pagoda Festival for having us down. Harry and I had such a great time, and it really is a festival that feels like there's a lot of love there. There's a lot of volunteers that work behind the scenes, getting everything done in the press team, the whole operations side of things. And it was just, a pleasure to be there and just really well planned. As Harry said, his summary was clean, no queuing, and efficient, which might sound like a really boring trilogy of reasons why to love a festival, but it's actually true. It made us love it. And at £2 a pint inside a festival, what more can you ask? It was amazing. A couple of times we woke up in the morning being like, mate, do I owe you for the last round? And then you check your Monzo and you're like, all right, it was actually £4. So don't worry about it, mate. Just act like you're absolute money bags. One shout out before I sign off for this episode. Crack Cloud, the Canadian band, played several sets across the weekend. And they played this amazing, it was quite theatrical actually. And they played out a non-stop kind of half hour set about a thing about a guy getting arrested. There's dancers up around him, up on these like high rise scaffold things. And their set was set up next to the old like airport satellite. So it had a really kind of, I don't know, grungy feel, industrial feel to it. And it was just a real spectacle actually. So yeah, really enjoyed it. But yeah, Pohoda Festival, thoroughly recommend it. And the lineups, by the way, if you look back, always stupidly good. So do check it out. Thanks once again for tuning in. We will, of course, be back very soon with our Truck Festival episode. The festival that made me sound like this. Back with you shortly. Ta-ra!